are eels? Very cool.
We're talking about eels.
These guys are so much of a mystery.
The eel is a kind of a cool little critter.
The eel gets no respect.
Yeah, eels have been around for a long time since eels have been around for like since dinosaurs.
The dorsal fin, you can tell that it's an eel.
Which means it's a fish, right?
Yeah, it's a fish.
A fish, how do you know it's a fish?
Yeah, he's got fins and he's also got gills. So this is a fish, it's not a snake, it's not a reptile, it is actually a fish.
Hey, are both saltwater and freshwater fish?
There's a lot of unknowns about eels, which make them probably one of the most fascinating creatures in the ocean.
The whole story is just amazing when I tell people.
You mean about eels?
Yeah, of coming from the Sargasso Sea and all the way up here. People have no idea.
Do you guys remember where eels are born?
Just say it.
Sargasso Sea.
Yes, exactly. They're born in Sargasso Sea, which is in between Bermuda and Puerto Rico. So, does anybody know roughly how many miles they swim to get to the Hudson River? Yes.
1,000?
Yes, a little over 1,000 miles.
So, glass eels are the very young, probably about a year old eels, and they're completely transparent, which is why they're called glass eels, right?
Correct. They are come directly from the ocean. And basically, when they're still in salt water, all you can really see is two little black eyes and a little bit of their vertebrae. But basically, they're almost totally transparent. You can see their heart, lungs. And usually, the eels are trying to go upstream with the least amount of resistance. So the way they do that is to avoid the current coming down on a good size stream. And they use the incoming tide to push them up. So those are the ways that basically an eel can preserve its energy for climb up.
One of the theories is that during new and full moons, when the high tides are highest, that's when eels use that high tide to help them ride into these tributaries.
So they travel 1,000 miles to get up here to the Hudson. And then they'll stay here, the males will stay for like 7-10 years, the females a little bit longer, up to 30 years max. And then where do they go? Yes?
Back to the Sargasso Sea.
Back to the Sargasso Sea, exactly. And then they'll spawn once, and then they'll die. So that's their life cycle.
Because they can't breed them in captivity.
No.
They're not even quite sure how they breed even now.
They don't know anything about them. The youngest one they've ever found was in the Sargasso Sea, and they found a valve in that submersible, but they still don't know if that's really where they go.
Oh, that's true. So you mean it's not really proven that that's where they mate? Huh.
But they never find any adults. They never...
Isn't that... What, they just find the glass eels in the Sargasso Sea?
Yeah, first the smallest one they found there.
That's interesting. So they don't find the adults?
No, they've never found an adult.
Basically, an eel was born to be eaten by something. So when they're babies, little fish eat them. When they're grown up, striped bass eat them. I've seen heron eating a 3-foot eel, just swallowing it down their throat. So their whole life is to avoid being prey. And so at nighttime, they hide in the mud and in the grass and everything else. And as the tides come on in, they come into the tide and they try to go up the little streams to live to their adult life, and usually lakes, and when they're ready to come back, they go back to spawn. So every eel you see in New York State has come from the ocean. As I said, eels are incredible little creatures, and what they do is they'll actually have this need to just keep on going upstream, hopefully to find a nice lake to live in for 10, 20 years before they come back down. And they end up going against dams, rock formations, rapids, and anytime there's a situation where they just can't swim, they literally find a grassy area on a slimy rock, and their bodies start roping literally over each other's bodies. So if you go at night, you can see them actually climbing up in these little strands up and over barriers to higher water. It's an incredible sight. I've only seen it twice in my life. And the water has to get warm enough, and then once the water's warm enough, they group up below the barrier and they start climbing up and over. And actually, your NCON people now use that technique to help them up and over dams and other barriers by creating artificial ladders, basically. And these eels use them to go upstream.
Wow.
Eels can stay out of water for 2 days.
Really?
Yeah, it's two.
And then are they going walking across land?
They stay close to water.
I also think the part that's remarkable that most people don't know is that they're going across land, and they're amphibious that way.
Right.
You know, and like I was having a coffee with Liz, and she ran into one of her neighbors, and he started talking about eels that come across the land and get in his pond.
They can come out of the water.
But they come out of the water.
They can actually breathe through their skin.
They come out of the water, and like on a rainy night, they'll go through the grass.
Yeah.
They can go around the dams and everything.
Jen, they're going to take over the world. You know? Can swim in the water, can walk on land, you know?
As eels migrate, they're growing to adulthood. They transform from glass eels to elvers and then into yellow eels. Yellow eels are adults, and they're usually over a foot in length, and they have olive green backs and yellow bellies. And all this time that eels are migrating upstream, they're heading up in elevation as well into the mountains. I've seen female eels in Lake Myosotis in Rensselaerville, which is at an elevation of about 2,000 feet. So they've traveled a long way from sea level to the mountains.
The story of the female eel is frankly more compelling than the male eel. So the female eels will live much longer. They'll live 10, 20, 30 years. And they'll get much bigger. If you have an eel that's over 2 feet, there's very good chances that it's a female eel. Male eels, they tend not to ascend so far into freshwater. They tend to live less, 5 to 10 years. They tend to be smaller, 2 feet long. It's the females that live a long time that get really big, because a big female might have up to 20 million eggs in her when she goes back down to the Sargasso. So, you know, she's the reason that she's up here in this freshwater is that it's a place to eat, to build body fat. When that body fat gets to a certain, you know, when her health gets to a certain size, that digestive tract withers away. She's done eating. She just becomes a one-way missile of reproduction back down to Sargasso.
The female is bigger than the male, so don't think that the male is a kid.
The female is very big. I think the girls enjoy that the female's the biggest. It's finally a chance to be bigger than the boys.
Have you seen the silver eels in Hudson? They're big.
So silver eels, the eels that we're counting are
glass eels. Those
glass
are the babies.
Eels.
And the silver eels are the ones that are going back to the Sargasso Sea.
Yeah, they're ready to leave.
They're on their way. And what's that business about stomachs being dissolved? I didn't quite get that.
That what?
When they're ready to reproduce, their stomachs dissolve.
Yeah, because they don't eat after they turn into silver eels.
Why not? What's all that about?
I don't know. It has something to do with them going out and breeding. I don't know. But they're
saving their energy for the good stuff.
Yeah, right. And they're big eels.
Yeah, you know.
So you wonder what they look like after they've gone that far. They had
well,
to
you know what? Like, yeah, I, you know, whether they even survive it after that.
Why are they
yeah.
called silver?
They don't think they do.
Do,
but
yeah. And maybe that's why none of the adults are found.
Oh, yeah, that's possible.
You know, that could be a piece of the puzzle right there.
Look at the shad and all those things that come up the river and die.
Right.
That go to Europe, are they slightly different?
So that's a different species. V very closely related, same genus, but a slightly different species. They take a lot longer. It takes them basically an extra year to get there. But they have a similar lifestyle. They're born basically in the same place, the Sargasso Sea. It just takes them longer to get there. One of the big questions is, so both the European and the American eels will live up in the watersheds for 5 or 10 or 20 or 30 years, and then they'll migrate back. The big question is, when those eels, let's take New York, here's the Hudson River right here, okay, we're right about at the T. When those eels leave, the question is, do they cross the Gulf Stream to head to the Sargasso Sea, or do they ride that current all the way around, past Europe, past Africa, and come into the Sargasso Sea from this direction?
Wow, so they're both originating at the same place, yeah, we think.
And somewhere out in the sea, someone's taking a left and someone's taking a right, heading to Europe. Right. Pretty interesting.
Well, not only that, but when they get to this country, they're in the Chesapeake, the Hudson,
right.
Up in Maine, they're all over. So
I'm told they'll even get into the Great Lakes.
Yeah.
And they'll go through the canals and the Mohawk River.
Oh, wow, okay.
Yeah,
I thought it was interesting because it's a little longer swim, I guess, to Europe. The Sargasso Sea, that's like over where Bermuda area out in there, right? So, you know, obviously it's closer east coast. And then you wonder if that's what attributes to the more vertebrae. As they're developing, they're swimming more, you know. I mean, it seems to make sense biologically, you know.
Yeah, well, that's what I was thinking, that there's a genetic advantage for the longer trip and having six vertebrae.
They say, man, if we got to keep swimming like this, we better grow a few more vertebrae. Tail's got to get a little longer here.
It's going to take us a while.
Yeah.
How long have you been working with the eels?
Oh, gosh. I don't know. I've been doing water education for at least 20 years. And eels were such a big part of it because they were so neat to have. Because the kids come on the boat like, they don't want to touch this thing, and all of a sudden they want to take one home, you know. Eels are fun. They really like the feel of being touched and petted, and you know, they're just really weird. So I would have the kids spread their hands and put their hand in the water, and the eels would crawl through their fingers, and it was
fun.
Oh, it's
a great teaching tool. Yeah. Oh, absolutely.
I discovered, too, that they like nail polish, and I can't figure out if it's the color or if it's the smell. And it's something about nail polish they love.
Now, Dee, I have to know, how did you discover that eels like nail polish?
Because the girls who had nail polish on would put their hands in the water, and the eels would come right over. And another one we had, I had a kid who had salami for lunch. And the eels went absolutely bonkers. They were all over that kid's hands and arms and just, you know.
Isn't that amazing? Yeah.
So that had to have been smell. Working with the eels with the kids have been really kind of neat.
It's got some pretty good anecdotal stories on eels, though, I'm telling you. Yeah.
They're fun.
People eat the eels.
Yeah, they eat eels.
Different cultures use eels differently. The Spaniard has a garlic and olive oil, of course, dish with glass eels. And literally, it's like a bowl of spaghetti, an expensive bowl of spaghetti, but it just comes in a plate, and it's just the raw eel, like a ceviche or something, they just a little olive oil and garlic, and they eat them that way.
Wow.
And the Dutch smoke them. They eat them like hot dogs. You have little sapper-type stands along the street with smoked eels hanging down. They wrap it up with a piece of wax paper and off you go. There is a tradition that you should eat a live eel with sake or liquor for nighttime virility. And so what you do is you get these eels, and I think the drinks were like $100 a pop or something like that. And you put the eel in your drink, and then you just swallow it down with your liquor. And rumor has it that was supposed to increase your evening enjoyment.
In the U.S., it used to be commonplace for people to catch and eat eels.
And they used to catch them out of Catskill Creek all the time. And what they would do, they'd get a nylon piece of nylon hose and put either meat in it or a bunch of worms in it, and you just tie it off and you put it on a rope and you just put it in the creek. And when you feel someone tugging, you just bring it up slowly, put it in. Because eels have no real teeth and their teeth would get stuck on the nylon. So you could actually just put a boatload of eels just by, without a hook. They would just get their teeth caught on the nylon and you just kind of raise them up, drop them in the boat, they would let go and just do it again. It's called bobbing, eel bobbing.
Eels as a source of sustenance have fallen out of favor in much of the Northeast. In the Hudson River, eels are exposed to PCBs and other contaminants, so the New York State Department of Health advises against eating the fish. And, you know, since eels have no value as a food fish or as a sports fish, they are misunderstood and disrespected by many anglers.
I didn't think much about eels until I started working with Riverkeeper. And the thing that comes to mind for me is how marvelous a creature they are and how they get zero respect. And so when I think of eels, I actually find it sort of a mixture of awesome and really tragic. And a vivid image that I have is on Piermont Pier. When I had a dog, I would walk out there in the mornings when I had time. And there's a lot of fishing there. And, you know, guys would catch eels. They were really fishing for striped bass. But they would catch an eel. And I have this image of a guy catching an eel. And eels, as I'm told, have slime on them because they live in the bottom sediment where there's lots of bacteria. So the slime is protective. And if you just think about it that way, it's a marvelous adaptation. But so these fishermen, this fisherman that I remember seeing, he didn't want to touch the eel. And so he put his foot on it, and he yanked the hook out of its face. And then he went back to fishing. Didn't take the trouble even to throw it back into the river. And that sticks in my mind. It was a terrible, terrible way to treat a living creature. And, you know, we all get, you know, mushy over monarch butterflies. But this eel story is no less fantastic than the monarch butterfly. But the eel gets no respect.
Eel populations are in decline worldwide, including American eels. Because of a concern for eel populations and an interest in increasing understanding of this fish, the Atlantic States Marine Fisheries Commission has established a monitoring program looking at populations of glass eels moving into the rivers on the eastern seaboard each spring. The New York State Department of Environmental Conservation's Hudson River Estuary Program has expanded the monitoring program to study glass eels entering into several tributaries of the Hudson River. So the Hudson River Eel Project involves teams of volunteers in different streams, setting and checking a net and counting the eels caught in that net daily. And it happens for about 6 weeks each spring that glass eels are monitored entering tributary streams from the Hudson River.
I hope we catch 1,000 eels.
On a daily basis, volunteer citizen scientists check the fike nets for glass eels. First, we measure water and air temperatures. Then we put on waders and go into the creek to collect the eels from the net. We bring them ashore in a bucket where we count them and record the data in a logbook.
Come on.
Yahoo! Oh, he's getting to be big.
Obviously, I don't have this.
We're looking for eels, folks. We're looking for eels.
Maybe my favorite part of the eel counting experience is wading upstream with a bucket of counted eels and setting them free on their merry way to head upstream where they won't be recaptured by our net. In our stream, the Hanacori Creek in Greene County, which is the northernmost monitoring site in the Hudson Valley. We walk 100 yards or so upstream.
How long have you been doing it?
I think this is our third year.
Mm-hmm.
The projects up and down the Hudson started earlier, I think, and we and Liz lobbied hard to get the Hanacroy included. And I think it was 3 years ago, first time. But it's great to get kids and people in the river. It's a beautiful river. It's been a fun project. It's been a fun project.
I'm really enjoying being a citizen scientist in this eel project, and I feel like I've learned so much in the last year. I'm finding myself now telling people all kinds of eel facts that I didn't formerly know, that I now know thanks to being in this project. And what's also interesting is very often when I start talking about eels to people, they then have their own eel story. So I'm really looking forward to this year's eel counting and can't wait to get out there.
I think that's one of the things that's so really cool about hands-on learning is actually getting out there and getting into the stream and experiencing the eels. Just is so engaging that you become fascinated with learning more and you just become a sponge for all sorts of information. So I'm with you. I'm hooked on eels.
I just think eels are fun.
Say, right? We crawled out of the water and we kept on walking on land, right?